In this episode, we discuss the unfortunate realities of the modern industrialized birth system, how it is not conducive to supporting the physiology of labor, and how this means real, tangible, poor outcomes for mothers and babies. We break down due dates, unnecessary interventions, inductions, cesareans, and the tenets of physiological labor that are generally unsupported in most hospital systems today. This is what happens when individualized care isn't the standard, and we break down several trap points for women to become aware of and avoid. We hope you learn a lot and come out feeling more empowered than ever.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. I'm excited to talk about this topic today.
Me too.
Dr. Morgan, why don't you tell us a little bit about the traditional birth system and just the issues with it?
Yeah. So this is something I'm super passionate about because I feel like there's a lot of women that get left in the dust with this system and it's super frustrating. I think that's like our goal in general is that we want things to be better for women and families, mothers. I mean, everybody in the whole world, of course, this is our wheelhouse. This is where we've decided that we're going to funnel our passion for this life. And with birth, I feel like it's such an opportunity to have an amazing experience bringing a baby into the world and as a family. And unfortunately, in America, we have some of the highest mortality rates, maternal mortality rates. We have actually the highest maternal mortality rate in all of the industrialized countries.
That's crazy.
Which is crazy because people think of America as having, the United States as having this amazing healthcare system. And we've seen in the last couple of years that there's a lot of gaps in that system and we need to be coming up with solutions and changing things rapidly. And I feel like that begins with awareness, which is like the whole point of why we're doing this, right? We just want to be talking about this. We want it to help educate people and what's happening. Ricky did this documentary, what was it, like 2007 or eight or something? It was a long time ago and nothing has really changed since she made that documentary. And now it's 2022 and we're still having...
And what is the documentary for those who don't?
The documentary is called The Business of Being Born. Mm-hmm. And it highlights how giving birth in America is like a corporation or a business, sort of shuttled through this system. And I understand why we want to be able to put parameters and boxes and numbers and protocols around the idea of the way that women give birth. But this is an inherently wild, up and down, flowy, infinitely changeable experience that you cannot, there is not a pattern of which every woman follows. It's just, that's not a thing. And it's really hard in our system of, you could call it like patriarchal, you could call it whatever. It's just industrialized. We're trying to control an inherently uncontrollable process.
Yeah.
And so the way that we've been giving birth in these hospital systems with the OBGYN care, and it's not to harp on any one particular doctor. Everybody who's in this system is trying to do the best that they can. It's the systemic issue of the way it is all set up, the way that the education is, the way the hospitals, these doctors and nurses have to do certain things based on hospital protocol.
Yeah.
Maybe they individually don't want to, and maybe they even look at the woman giving birth and they're like, this isn't actually even appropriate for her, but we have hospital protocols and rules. So we can't, or we have to, or whatever. And I understand too, that there is a level of safety that they're wanting to have as a baseline with that choice. However, as we know with individualized medicine, especially with birth, it needs to be the most individualized medical event of a person's life. It needs to be the thing that someone is looking at, what is happening, how far apart the contractions are, where is she feeling it, how is she moving, what's going on? And the decisions are based in that way and not on a protocolized system.
Yeah.
And so I think like the main issue that is causing a lot of unnecessary suffering, trauma, bad experiences, and then leading to these high induction rates, these high cesarean rates. So in 2020, the cesarean rate for this country was 31.7%, which is a third of all births being born by cesarean. It's like that is not, and it's just getting more and more every year that goes by. It's just higher and higher and higher. If that's going to be the case, like, where are we tracking? What are we looking forward to or looking into the future? Is it going to be half of all births in a couple of years are born by surgery? And it's not like these procedures are without risk. So that's a frustrating aspect. They're not without risk. that these women are being told that their bodies have failed, which is super frustrating as well.
Yeah. So while you're going into this, why don't you back up and say, what are the issues? Because for a woman listening, she might not realize that the way that birth is done is even an issue.
Okay.
What are some of the issues that you're highlighting that you're passionate about?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Good. Let's backtrack. And I could just go off on this, explode about it.
We're both passionate. I know. So many things.
I know. And that's why this is great. The problem is that we act as if it doesn't matter, or that we don't know the things that support a normal physiological birth. The things that support a normal physiological birth are to not induce it, first of all, unless it's absolutely necessary. Now, that would be for things like preeclampsia. And then the further evolution of preeclampsia is something called HELLP syndrome, which is like an immediate baby out of the system.
For someone who doesn't know, what is preeclampsia? Just as a quick.
Preeclampsia is a sort of a syndrome collection of symptoms where there's a high blood pressure, there's the protein in the urine, and it is dangerous to the baby.
Okay.
There's the idea behind it is that there's potentially something going on with the placenta, and the woman is cured by the baby getting out.
So that might be a medical reason why you would go into the system.
Exactly. Why you would need to maybe be induced.
But not everybody is having those issues.
No. Yeah. Yes. And then HELLP syndrome is a more severe form of preeclampsia. And then the big baby thing has really been a controversial idea in the last several years. People are starting to realize, okay, women's pelvises are not, this idea comes from way back when we did not have proper nutrition and women were not getting vitamin D to the levels that they needed to support their growth during puberty. Pelvises were literally being deformed or malformed. So then when it came time for them to have babies, there was an actual issue with a pelvis not lining up with the size of the baby. But that today is an incredibly rare, if not maybe not a thing, issue. And so women are being told, oh, your baby's too big. We should induce at 39 weeks, especially with these first-time moms. A 39-week induction is unlikely to go very well, especially if she's wanting a physiological birth.
Explain to people why.
Okay.
Because I think it's confusing because some women are like, why wouldn't I just go in and get the baby cut out of me? Like, why is induction a problem? Why would that lead to this series of events that seems to happen? Walk through that with people.
Yes. Okay. Inducing your body by giving it, there's the gels, there's the cervical pills, there's Foley bulbs, there's sweeping the membranes, Pitocin is breaking the waters. There's all these different methods. And inducing a birth in a woman who's not ready to give birth to a baby and when it is not medically necessary sets her up on this trajectory of path of intervention. This is very well known. Intervention in the hospital setting where it's, okay, we're going to give you this thing to start your labor. Then often those contractions are much stronger, closer, more intense. The managing of birth in general is tough. You need to be very mentally prepared.
Because it's more painful.
When you're getting induced, it's more painful often. Yes. A Pitocin contraction, specifically with Pitocin. So sometimes these other forms can kickstart your own body's natural. So they can more successfully, if they wanted to have an unmedicated birth, like unnatural in terms of pain medication, they're more likely to achieve that. With Pitocin, it's much more difficult. A Pitocin contraction. So Pitocin is synthetic oxytocin. Pitocin is what's naturally released in our brains. We have receptors all over our uterus, all over our bodies, really, in our breasts, everywhere. And this is what continues this positive feedback cycle of having contractions until the baby is born.
Right.
And I say expelled because we know that women in comas who are completely unconscious of this, what is happening, will give birth to a baby. This is a natural physiological process. We have medicalized it so much and hypermanaged this that it's come to the point now where we are having to cut out a third of all babies being born in this country. And that is a problem. So back to the induction. So you're just more likely to be on this path of interventions. Now you need to get an epidural because the pain is so, and then, oh, now an epidural is inherently the way that they, one of the things that happens with them is that the contractions slow down. Even if she was on a good labor pattern, sometimes contractions will slow down. So then, okay, now we need to give Pitocin. Okay. So now we have an epidural plus Pitocin. So mom is less able to move around. Baby's not able to help navigate the pelvis. We are meant to be up mobile, moving around, doing different positions. We know the way that the pelvis moves. It's not a set bone structure. Mm-hmm. All three of the bones, the two sides of the pelvis and the sacrum, are all moving in this dance throughout the entire labor. And the baby is navigating. The baby's doing a lot of work. I think sometimes people think that babies are passive in the birth process. They are not. They are doing a million different little rotations and they have to do these patterns. They're called the cardinal movements as they navigate the pelvis. And it's more difficult, not to say that it never happens, obviously, but it's more difficult for a baby to do that if mother is in the same position, stuck. Now, in hospital systems, things that have been changing where, you know, the nurses will come in, they'll put a big peanut ball between your legs if you have an epidural. They'll move you every once in a while, also because of the way the nature of the epidural can settle, so then it won't work. You need to use gravity. You
have to. I remember. Yeah, I had to have one.
Exactly. And you were really having a hard time getting it to shift onto that other side.
Yeah.
Yes. But we were doing a lot of good motions with you, moving you around. And so sometimes that happens in the hospital system. Sometimes it doesn't. The problem is that people don't even know that they need to be doing that.
Exactly.
Because there is not a proper birth education.
They don't have a U.
I wish I could do it. And I'm not to say that I claim that I know everything about birth. I just feel like the inherent idea that it is a natural physiological process and resonates so deeply within me that it's like, what are the problems here? And why does it matter? The reason that it matters is because the woman's birth experience is a huge deal in her life. Mm-hmm. And birth trauma is, I feel like recently all sorts of trauma are starting to come out to be talked about more often, which is great because we need to deal with this. Mm-hmm. Generational trauma, inner child work, all of the reparenting yourself, all of these different things. And birth trauma is on that spectrum. It is important. There used to be this idea, or I feel like it's actually still out and about, which is that, oh, all that matters is a healthy baby. That is not all that matters. Mm-hmm. Honestly, that's a baseline. Everybody wants and needs a healthy baby.
Right.
But we're not going to just pretend that, oh, if it's a horrifically traumatic experience for the mom, it doesn't matter because oh, the baby's alive.
Right.
No, that is not the case. This is something she's going to take with her whole life. Mm-hmm. We also know that the health of the baby is, there are differences between a baby's born via C-section, babies born vaginally. And I feel like as more and more generations go on, we're going to continue to learn these different repercussions. And then we know some ways to mitigate it now too, like with the vaginal receding, swabbing the baby's eyes and nose and mouth with a big swab that has been placed inside of the vagina to get some of the bacterial colonies on it. And then when the baby comes out, lots of skin to skin, which helps colonize the baby, but then also you can swab the baby with that. I know it sounds gross, but guys, think about the way that when a baby is coming out, babies also, when they come out, typically are facing mom's bum. That's on purpose. It's like it feels like it's yucky, but it's like they're getting this huge inoculation of bacteria.
And for people who don't know, we have bacteria all over us, on top of us, inside of us,
everywhere.
And often the types of bacteria that we have dictate our health, from our mood to our hormonal imbalance 100%. To our long-term health. And so when we're talking about seeding bacteria, it is in reference to getting mom's healthy flora or bacteria. Otherwise, oftentimes they get the bacteria that's in the hospital.
In the hospital, exactly. So when we look at these microbiomes of these babies as they become children and teens and adults, their microbiome profile mimics that more of a hospital rather than the family, the rest of the family. So there are things that we know and we're learning and we can mitigate. And there's gentle cesareans now as well, which is really great and important, which is like the mom has more option in the process, can maybe see the baby coming out, or is allowed, I hate that term, but to have skin to skin with the baby. And the delayed cord clamping, which is where you don't cut the cord immediately. You allow all of the blood that belongs to the baby to flow from the placenta back into the baby. And then you only cut the cord once it's white and limp, which would indicate that all of the baby's blood that belongs to it is inside of it. So those sorts of practices are coming about, which is great.
Yeah.
But I think that it's such a shame that people are shuttled into this system not knowing. And they're like, oh, it's fine. You just listen to your doctor and you just do these things. And when we tell you to do this, then you just do that and everything's going to be fine. And hey, your baby's going to come out. And it's like, hold up. How many first-time mothers are going into the motherhood experience having had a major abdominal surgery, which is real? It's tough bringing home a baby if everything goes amazing. If there is no, say it was a vaginal birth and there was no tearing and it wasn't too exhausting and long and all of these things, it's still such a shock to the system to bring home a newborn.
Yeah.
Now, on top of that, to have also be recovering from a really major surgery and just why are we doing this? Because it's easier to control in the hospital system. If you were to speak with an OBGYN, I don't think that they would think about it like that. They're not malicious people. It's not like they're trying to just do this thing. But there is a huge difference in the way that OBGYNs are trained versus the way that midwives are trained. It's called the midwifery model of care. We have to remember OBGYNs are surgeons. 70% of their training is in surgery and they're excellent surgeons. It's a needed, imperative, amazing thing. Yeah. And we have saved so many babies' lives, so many women's lives, being able to have that medical skill. And I'm not at all saying that we don't need it. What I am saying is, there's so many women who don't need it getting it.
Yeah. It's the naturopathic medicine. We have the ladder of interventions,
of
therapeutic order. And we really apply this to everything in medicine, and that we don't need the very top rung surgery and medication for every condition, which is what the conventional model does. Whether you have an ulcer or you have a hormonal imbalance or you're depressed or you're giving birth, they automatically get put to the very tip top, which is surgery and medication. And there's so many other interventions and levels and a trust in the natural process of the body and its ability to heal. And then you're talking about in its ability to birth.
Exactly.
And if our system was set up with that inherent belief, it's so simple. It's a simple paradigm shift. Yes. And it would change
everything.
Everything.
It changes everything. It puts it back in the hands of the individual and of the mother giving birth as well, which I think is an empowering experience. And maybe there's a certain level to this where we are just fearful. We've been brought up terrified of birth for all of eternity because of the way that it's depicted in the media and the way that people talk about it. And if for some reason, women hear these really horrible traumatic birth stories while they're pregnant. Don't do that.
I know.
If you're telling your pregnant friends really horrible stories, please stop doing that. Also, mm-hmm. please stop spreading the misinformation that home birth is dangerous, because mm-hmm. there are so many studies now, meta-analyses, mm-hmm. Cochrane reviewed meta-analyses, which is like the head of the top you can get for looking at lots of data that are showing that the idea that home birth is unsafe is not true.
Right.
One of the things that I get a lot on social media backlash from is from paramedics and EMTs that mm-hmm. seen really horrible things happening at home births. There's a difference between a planned home birth and an accidental home birth.
And you have to keep in mind, if you're talking to a NICU nurse,
yes,
or an EMT, their experience of birth will be traumatic because they are only being called to the trauma births.
Exactly.
They don't see the normal births.
Exactly.
They don't see the normal physiological births. So they have a skewed idea of all births because that's their only experience with birth. An EMT is not going to be called to a beautiful, empowered birth of a woman who's like birthing in water. They're just not going to be called to that.
Exactly. So they're never going to see it. That. And same thing with the, and this is an important note about the way the OBGYN model is that they're trained pathologists to see pathology, look at a potentially normal situation and try to find the problem. And there is definitely a lot of lives saved that have been grasped from that model of looking at it through that lens. Not like midwives don't also do that, but they have a different lens and view of this as a natural physiological, natural meaning like inherent to our bodies, the way we poop. You know, we don't need help to poop. Sometimes we do actually, but it's not being pulled
from rare situations.
Yes.
Most people can poop on their own.
Exactly.
All of the sphincters are in place. Everything is good. Some people need to maybe surgically have their intestines removed.
Of course.
Very rare situation.
Rare.
But not 30% of the population.
No, exactly. Good. Thank you. Oh my gosh. The peristalsis, which is like where your intestines are squeezing in this kind of rhythmic motion. Mm-hmm. We don't have to think to make that happen. It just happens. Contractions will start. And we've put mm-hmm. these boundaries. Oh my gosh, 42 weeks. The day you turn 41 and 1 week, or 42 weeks plus 1 day, your baby's going to die because your placenta is going to fail. Now we can look at some of these averages and say, okay, yeah, maybe these 43 week, 44 week placentas, it's not worth the weight gain. Mm-hmm. This also comes back to nutrition.
Yeah.
This is a big problem, you guys. There's so many layers of why this all is happening and why we've been caught up in, this is why we're calling this system the birth system trap, because it feels so difficult. It's like we're running on this hamster mm-hmm. wheel. How do we get out of this? We have to have the proper nutrition. We need to be moving our bodies throughout pregnancy. We need to be really prepping our minds for the way, even if your plan, okay, what I was going to say was we need to be prepping our minds for birth and truly, really understanding it. And even if your plan is to go in and get an epidural, which is many women's plan. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You just need to know you may have to deal with 1-2 days of early labor contractions before you're even allowed to be admitted to the hospital. And so many people don't think that's going to happen because they don't understand birth.
Yeah.
And they don't understand the way that our contractions, and it's not on them. I'm not saying anybody is stupid and that this is their problem. It's a systemic issue mm-hmm. that we are not being prepared for.
Yeah. It's crazy that we literally aren't taught it at all. And it just happens and we're expected to just
know about it.
Really foreign thing with zero education.
Zero education. That's how I feel about breastfeeding
too.
Isn't it so silly? It's don't think about it or learn about it until you have to do it all day, every day.
Yeah.
And
could you imagine if someone was like, we just dropped you off and you're about to do a triathlon. You don't even know what that means.
You better win.
I know.
What? And it's so frustrating because it doesn't have to be like that. And it's just like, it's like as if there's these gaps in the way that it has been. And we've been just getting by under the radar where not enough people are pissed off yet to really shift and change things. But there's so many voices like us that have just been screaming from the rooftops that this needs to shift and change. Another aspect of this is that this can be an incredibly empowering, life-changing experience for the family. And I feel like that opportunity is getting ripped from people left and right for no reason. There are reasons that people have inductions and cesareans. There are so many other people who are, they have no complications. They're low risk. Normal physiological labor would be allowed if they were left alone.
Yeah.
So what I was saying earlier too, is that we act as if we don't know the things that support a physiological labor, such as darkness, not being poked and prodded, like being left alone, support. The idea that families are going into first birth, especially first birth. And I talk about first birth a lot because it's this very, your subsequent births can be longer and harder is so true, but typically because you've already had the experience of birth, at least you as the person experiencing it are a little calmer. And, but also the pathways have been paved. Those hormonal loops are stronger. Mm-hmm. And if it was a vaginal birth, the path has literally been paved. Your pelvis has already moved that way. Mm-hmm. Cervix has already dilated to 10. It's so much easier for that to happen another time. But the first time is this sort of vulnerable time period. And for just woman and her partner to be going into a hospital, neither of them really having maybe a deep education about what's happening. And even if they do, it's banana. And the nurses are supportive. Mm-hmm. Doulas, they're at work. Mm-hmm. They have other stuff to do. They can't be in the room with you doing a bunch of stuff. Maybe if they even wanted to, they still can. It's not their job. That is not why they're there. And the situation is just so wild to me because it's so tough, so hard. So of course they're going to choose the pain medication. Of course they're going to try to make it stop when it gets really hard because there isn't support. As you need to be like, and maybe not everybody wants to be tough. You need to have that really deep sense of I'm safe.
Yeah.
I'm supported. Everything's okay. I know that this is fine. And if somebody can be another person in that room, like a doula or just somebody who's given birth before, like when you think about way, way back in the when, red tent days, birth was a woman-centric event.
Yeah.
And I love the partners are involved in it now. I really do. I don't think that it needs to go back to being women, but I think that having a woman in the room who has delivered a baby before or who is very educated is so calming. This, it's almost like that big sister, little sister. It's the mentorship. This is how our generations throughout all of time with humanity have done everything. It's elders teaching, seeing it. This is okay. This is normal. Just go back. Yeah. Just lay back down. Mm-hmm. Everything's fine. I'm going to squeeze your hips and you're going to get through this. And it's going to be hours and hours and that's okay. You're going to be okay.
Yeah. The thing that was so shocking to me when I learned, I think Ina May Gaskin talks about the sphincter reflex idea and that mammals want to poop alone. We don't get in the middle of a bright room with men we don't know and say, watch me poop. But we're obviously going to hold it in. We're not going to want that. And we want to be alone. We want to be private. We want to be not in the bright white poked and prodded. And birth is similar in that. And I think what happens for a lot of women is maybe they do even go into labor naturally. Then they transfer to the hospital and all of a sudden they're in a strange place. They don't know anyone. If they have had any sort of issue with authority, with medical trauma, or even men, if there's a male OB-GYN,
totally.
All of a sudden they're naked. Maybe they've never been in a situation like that at all. And they're in pain. It's new. It's scary. And all of a sudden they're expected to just relax enough to go into labor. It's like the body stopped. And then the hospital says, oh, you're not progressing. So we need to induce or we need to do whatever. And that's the process that then starts this intervention that you're talking about so many times.
Yes.
And
even if you go into labor, that's a good distinction. Thank you for saying that. Mm-hmm. If you do go into labor naturally, the transfer to the hospital, unless you're in a very strong active labor pattern, is a stop start for so many people.
Yeah.
And it's where the beginnings of things getting kind of manipulated begins.
The beginning of intervention. And like what you mentioned earlier, not on this podcast, but I want to bring up and not forget, is when those women go in and then they start an intervention, they don't necessarily realize, oh, there was something wrong with this transfer. That is why my labor is not progressing.
Yeah.
There's nothing inherently wrong with me, but now we've gone through the series of intervention that eventually maybe ends in a C-section and thank God you saved my baby.
Yes.
When they maybe didn't need to be saved if it was just left alone.
100%. The story of, this is one of the things that I think that makes me the saddest because it's not true. And it is a tenet that I think can shape a lot of, it's like our modern culture has this, maybe it's been intentional. I want to think that it's not been intentional, but energetic sort of thread throughout that we can't trust our bodies, that, oh, if we don't do this and this, then we're going to be sick. oh my gosh, you can't come overcome this, blah, 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 blah. Now it is true that our environment is very toxic now, but we did that. If we were living in a perfect scenario, our human bodies, which are animals, our animal bodies would adapt and do things the way that they have throughout all of time. But the story that I was referring to is that it is so common. The woman who maybe is induced at 39 or 40 weeks because of something, her doctor's out of town, or, oh, I think you're starting to measure a little big, let's just go ahead and schedule it. And now what mom is not at the end of her pregnancy, so over it, so excited to meet the baby, is like excited by that. I get it. It's enticing. So enticing. And we have to remember that beginning that process with pharmaceuticals rather than your brain is different.
Yeah,
it is. You are now in a different higher risk category for all of the rest of the interventions. And people act like that's not a true thing. And they're like, no, you're not. No, that's not a case. If that was the case, they would tell you, no, you guys, this is informed consent that no one is getting anymore for anything in general.
We will talk more about that at other times.
And as a side note, I was just at a hospital birth 2 weeks ago with the best informed consent besides your birth. That OB-GYN was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, she was.
And at this birth, I was just out with these hospital midwives that sat on the edge of this woman's bed with her hand on her shoulder, waited for her to have a contraction before speaking a word to her the way anybody should speak to a woman in active labor, had the kindest, softest energy. They walked her through her options. It's almost gonna make me cry. I was like, holy crap, why can't this be the way that it is?
Yeah.
How, it's not difficult. And these other people come into the room. I've seen this happen before. Talking to her throughout a contraction, putting the blood pressure cuff on in the middle of a contraction. It only lasts 1 minute. I get that you're on a schedule. Wait.
Yeah.
The excruciating pain of a contraction that's then interrupted by more sensory input is like enough to make somebody just tip over the edge and be like, I can't do this anymore.
Exactly.
I don't want to feel this anymore. Numb me out. Make it stop. I can't. And I get that. You can't do that. You just can't do that. Anyway, sorry. So I saw the most lovely informed consent though. And I was so moved and pleased. And I was like, this is the way forward in our lives. Okay. But the story of the woman who was induced because of some reason that is invalid and then has the path of interventions, the 2 or 3 day induction at the hospital, the epidural, the, oh, you're really progressing not slow. Let's crank up the pitocin. Let's crank it up. Let's crank it up. Oh, now the baby doesn't like that. Oh, interesting. I wonder why the baby doesn't like to be squeezed at this incredible strength and rate that is unnatural to the body. The risk of Pitocin, no, and I have never seen the risk of somebody, or the informed consent though, I will say, of what the risks of Pitocin can be.
Yeah.
Which is uterine rupture. And
no one told me that.
I know.
They didn't even tell me the fentanyl
in your epidural.
Very frustrating.
I know. And people have this preconceived notion sometimes as well, not you, but I'm just saying in general, that the baby is not getting affected by the epidural, which is 100% untrue. The baby is absolutely being born with those medications in its bloodstream. Now, you still may choose that. And I think that was the right choice in your birth. I really, truly do. There is a point where if a mother is going to become so exhausted from a long labor, now why long labors happen is like still an enigma to me. I don't really get it. It's really frustrating. It can happen though. There is a point where we use these medications. We use this modern medicine so that we can have a good experience at the end of the day, which is not having a mother that is so exhausted and tired that she cannot be present for her newborn. Because the reality is you're going into motherhood now. You are going into parenting and that train doesn't stop and there's very little breaks.
Yeah.
And you have to be managing that idea of energetics in this whole idea. So there, it's not wrong to choose this. We just need to know and be empowered in our decision to be like, yeah, you know what? And I think this is the right choice for right now. And that's different than being like persuaded and manipulated. And do you want your epidural now? Do you want your epidural now? Do you want asking this person who's like, maybe had it in their plan that they didn't want to do that. But anyway, back to the woman who's been induced for no reason and then has this slew of interventions and then ends up in that situation where baby's heart rate is dropping. And now it's a very scary emergency C-section. Maybe if she didn't have an epidural prior, or if something isn't working and they have to be very quick, she may be put under general anesthesia and the baby cut out and boom. And maybe the baby's in NICU, maybe aspirated meconium because it was more stressed in utero, which some meconium in the waters can be normal depending on how long the baby has gestated for.
Which is their first poop.
Yeah, sorry, it's the first poop. And what can be an issue is that if when they're coming out, if they inhale a bunch of the meconium, it's different from inhaling just plain amniotic fluid, and it can cause like pneumonia and it can prevent them from being able to breathe properly. They'll need more assistance, et cetera. Again, more intervention. So then now this person walks around for the rest of their life with this story in their mind that their body failed them. The doctors saved them. They would have both died in labor had it not happened that way.
Right. When it wouldn't have happened at all, potentially, without the
right
series of intervention in the hospital from the beginning. And I think this is something that women don't ever really think about. They always blame themselves, which is inherent in our culture. It's inherent in just women in general, where they're like, oh, it's my fault. I did something wrong. My body failed. The doctor, the authority, the man, whatever, saved me.
Yep.
And I think
it's don't have a crystal ball, so we can't know in every scenario, of course. And I'm not acting like all of these people were just swindled and bamboozled by the system, but there are a huge amount. 30% C-section rate is not in line with what would actually be needed in a natural setting. Also, 30% C-section rate, and what is it? 25% induction rate. So in 1990, our induction rates were 9.6%. In 2018, induction rates, 25.7%.
Yeah.
And our mortality rates have changed zero, except for going up. That's a problem.
That's crazy.
If we were to be doing more medical intervention and seeing death rates going down and better outcomes, it would make sense.
Right.
And that's not what's happening. And that's what's really infuriating. And I think that this all, again, goes back to that idea of nutrition and pregnancy, having reverence for this whole process, which is your whole shtick, getting pregnant or optimizing your health before you get pregnant, knowing that it matters, staying healthy in your pregnancy, moving your body, eating well, doing the right thing, and preparing your mind mentally for birth as well is like such a huge thing.
Yeah. And we'll go in deep on a lot of those on this podcast. To wrap up this episode, I want two parts. The first part is just explain quick bullet points for someone where you feel are the biggest issues for a woman to be looking out for, of just being mindful of where this intervention might take place, or just some key thoughts to be thinking. Sign up what you said. For the most part, birth is physiological and you need to be dark, and give us some tips for that.
Yeah. Okay. Along with the darkness, we are mammals. We deliver alone. Typically, this is like natural human culture would be alone or in the presence of a couple of women. And babies tend to come at night. That's because of melatonin, the pituitary oxytocin hormonal loop. The darkness is important. So if you are laboring still in the nighttime, turn the lights off, put
an
eye mask on. Trick your brain. It's tricky because we do have this prefrontal cortex, which is very smart and very anxious and thinks way too much.
Yeah.
And we have to get into our like lizard brain. We have to forget about all of this. And literally your brain is going into a different state of consciousness. Wapio talks about this. Wapio is a midwife similar to Ina Mae Gaskin, where she's just really put out so much amazing content and has changed so many women's lives in mentoring these new generations of women and midwives rather, of how to think about birth. And okay. So blocking out the light, no matter what time of the day it is, being left alone in terms of being poked and prodded, asked questions, we need to be getting, that's what I was going to say. Wapio talks about how we are literally in a different consciousness state. And so pretend almost like when you're on a like psychedelic drug or put into some form of a different brainwave state or coma or something. And now imagine this person in this like kind of aura bubble of this space between worlds. She's bringing her baby through. She's in this, it's the most amazing thing. She is in this state where she is going to bring forth life. The most important thing arguably on the planet would be to continue to make new life, right? And then she's met by people. If she's not in a conscious like area where she's met by people who are understanding of this, then she's going into a factory setting in a highly masculinized, and I say masculinized, not to say patriarchal, but because science, medicine, systems like this are masculine energy
structure,
in their order,
schedule,
yes,
timelines,
logic,
deadlines,
yes,
dates that end.
Exactly. Timelines and rules. Yeah. And it's not the fluid, fluid feminine, like
the birth
creative, which is birth. Exactly. Mm-hmm. This is a huge mismatch. It's like opposites of the magnet. They just bounce, they repel each other. Mm-hmm. So she's in this like different brainwave state. Literally her aura is in a different phase, like her energetic, bioenergetic field. Now she goes into this place and she's met with people who don't understand that, don't have reverence for it, don't acknowledge it. And they're trying to interface with somebody who's on a different reality plane and it doesn't work. My ultimate tip is to stay home. Really is. If you want to have a natural physiological birth, meaning, and I say natural, and people have a really hard time with that word sometimes. And what I don't mean natural, because all birth is natural in a way, but what I'm saying is physiological. Staying home is your best chance at that, because of the intersection between the midwifery model of care, which is reverence for, understanding of, and support of a normal physiological process. And they are trained to see it as such. They also are constantly looking for problems, of course, because the midwives are up against the AMA, American Medical Association, and all of the different garbage that they're constantly trying to fight for, and their licenses always being at stake, and more rules being placed on them. So they're not negligent. They're not going to stay at home if there's a problem, because if they cannot afford to have anything happen, they will be demonized. Whereas things happen all the time under the care of an OBGYN and nothing happens. Mm-hmm. Very frustrating. Okay. But you're also now in a setting where you're comfortable in your house or a birth center. Although I will say birth centers are really you just driving to somebody else's house. Mm-hmm. There's nothing a birth center has, no different pain medication, no different augmentation of the way that the postpartum hemorrhage or the neonatal resuscitation or any of that stuff happens. A midwife brings to your home the exact same things that midwives at birth centers have access to. The reason a birth center is a good idea is if you don't like your house, it's small, you're in an apartment, you have roommates, you whatever, things like that. But staying home, but the downfall then of a birth center though is that you still have to drive somewhere.
Yeah.
And that is where you were talking earlier about you're pulling them out of this, you're putting them in society and traffic, and they're not being able to stay in this cognitive state where these hormone loops are working so that we can get the baby out. If we're stop, start, freak her out, bring her up out of here. Okay. Now she's back down now for maybe 2 hours. She's in her flow. Now she's being poked around. Okay. Can you see how that's not going to work? That physiologically things can get messed up in that
process.
Trying
to poop and then stop the poop and stop the poop.
Yes. Exactly, or like having your kids coming in a million times while you're trying to poop, yeah. Which every mom knows. It's not easy. But so to stay home or to stay in a situation, or if you're going to go to the hospital, support yourself knowing all of this information.
Yeah.
Arm yourself with the idea, these physiological truths that we know about our bodies, and have a doula or a support person. Wear your headphones, wear your eye mask, have your doula be interfacing with the nurses that are maybe trying to put the blood pressure cuff on your arm during a contraction, and have her tell them to wait.
Yeah.
They don't need to do it right now. And put on the birth plan. Don't ask me for medications. Don't talk to me. Leave me alone. Leave me alone until we need to not be left alone anymore. But you have to really, it's almost like I liken it to talking to the police, because there's this authority dynamic that's very scary. And if you know your rights, when you're talking to the police, they can maybe not swindle you as much. And you can be like, no, I actually don't need to do that, because what person, like lay person, just knows that information? This is the same thing with birth. Yeah. What lay person actually knows the informed consent of, no, I actually, everything's fine. Give me 2 more hours. Like, we don't have to do this. You can also leave a hospital in the middle of birth. This is like a radical idea, but you can also sign against medical advice, AMAs. You can deny things. And I know that this will be outside of a lot of people's comfortability, because they're like, I'm not a doctor. And I get that. And there are reasons. And I'm not saying all doctors are manipulative or trying to do things. We just have to understand the lens through which people are coming at this process, and start to shift things backwards. And the midwifery model of care is just such a beautiful model to look at, because they are already doing it. They've been doing it for centuries, and their rates, their outcomes, their numbers are so much better. But because they're not in the traditional medical system, they really don't get any praise or rap for it. And this comes down to money as well, which we're going to talk about that another time.
Competitor to that industrial system.
Exactly. It's the competitor. And that's sad, because it should be a hierarchy. You were mentioning it should be
like my birth. So I prepared because of you for a physiological birth, started at home. It was awesome. Did all the things. And maybe arguably there was some like natural induction we were trying, because I was going up to 42 weeks, taking homeopathy, things like
that. But again, because of this rule, Everything was changed.
Of the masculine rule that I had to birth before 42 weeks in the state of California, Then after 32 hours in labor, I was exhausted and I didn't have much time left that I transferred to the hospital, and it ended up being an intervention birth that ended up in a C-section, which was not at all what I wanted at all. But like, I gave it the best shot and effort. And I think so many other women who would have done the same thing as me wouldn't have ended up in the hospital. They would have been able to deliver at home. And we just have to do this ladder of intervention. And so the biggest takeaway I would say for people from this episode is there's two. What you're sharing with me, if I could wrap it up, would be think of birth as a physiological process and you go up the intervention ladder, down at letting your body do what it needs to, as opposed to jumping to the very tip top of the ladder right away. That often causes more problems. And then two, to do the things and create the support before birth to allow the natural physiological process to happen, what you're talking about with the darkness and being left alone and all of that. And so start to educate yourself on that it's not this passive process that you're just being shuttled around in the hospital with these people that quote unquote know more.
Yes.
Because in many ways they don't know more.
Yes, absolutely. And there's been many women who are in labor and are saying to people of authority, something's wrong. I know my body, blah, blah, blah. And they're not listened to. That is a tragedy as well.
Yeah.
And like you were saying about preparing, nobody runs a marathon without preparing. Mm-hmm. Nobody runs a marathon without knowing all the different like glucose goos that they're going to take and at what point they're going to drink water and everything, knowing this is a physiological process. Mm-hmm. Okay. The last thing I'll say too about your birth is that the reason why your birth was so unique in that it was the home birth cesarean, that idea of the full opposite end of the spectrums. But, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you, because of the way you were involved in the choice making, had a great experience.
Oh yeah. No, I would never qualify my birth as traumatic, but it was because I had all of that previous knowledge and education and knowing, and I knew from a physiological level that we literally did everything.
Yes, we really did. And I knew that too. I was like,
and that is the time and place for a C-section.
Exactly.
But it's not a third of all women.
Exactly.
Absolutely not.
Exactly. And we gave it a real solid effort. Yes. We really did.
And I feel very good about it.
Yeah.
And we now know the things to mitigate the risk to C-sections, but I do not wish, just like I went through IVF, I do not wish people to go through IVF. I do not wish women to go through a C-section. I do not think that is the appropriate route for most women. And so, yeah, we need to be better. And we aren't anti the hospital. We aren't anti these things. My baby wouldn't be here without it.
Yeah.
And I am very anti the situation that is currently in this in the world, and we need to change it.
Yeah, 100%. And we just got to keep doing it by having these kinds of conversations and helping open people's eyes. And it's uncomfortable. And I encourage you that if you've been triggered by anything in this episode to look into it deeper and prove me wrong, because I don't think you'll be able to. And it's sad. I don't want it to be like this.
Yeah.
It's not like this is my wish and joy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So leave us with one last like little nugget or tip as we wrap up.
So Ina Mae Gaskin says two things. Ina Mae Gaskin says, your body is not a lemon. Lemon meaning like the referral of a car is just inherently doesn't work and it's broken. Your body is not broken. And our many things in our culture lead us, as women especially, lead us to believe that we are. We're not fat enough. We're not skinny enough. We don't have big enough boobs. Our boobs are too big. We're too loud. We're too quiet. We're meek. We're bossy. We're whatever, all about our personalities, but similarly about our bodies, that we have all of this problem. And it doesn't make sense, you guys. How did we adapt and get here? And then secondarily, the quote, which I'm not exactly sure who says this. I thought it was Michelle Odant, who's a French OBGYN, who's amazing. But I don't think it is actually, but the quote goes like this. It says, peace on earth begins with birth. And it's the idea that if we had reverence for and respect for the way a new baby came into the world as this humongous and very important event to the lives of the family and the baby themselves, their experiences, how would that have a ripple effect, a butterfly effect throughout all of the ways that humanity functions and the way that we have compassion and empathy and respect and just capacity for differences and all sorts of different things throughout our society. I think it's really powerful. That quote is humongous.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you. Morgan, you're the best. Love being your best friend.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast.
In order for other women to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content.
We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.